This is tape number two on Arthur Schopenhauer. Schopenhauer's philosophy of the will culminates in a bleak landscape of the human condition. For Schopenhauer, the age of enlightenment and the triumph of reason have passed. We live in a world ruled by the will, not by reason. This will is essentially a will to live, to survive. It expresses itself in all the forces of nature. The will parasitically feeds on itself in nature's life and death struggles, where some animals survive at the expense of others. This perpetual striving for life involves endless suffering. The life of the individual must always succumb to death. The will neither aims at nor achieves any higher goal than continued existence. Schopenhauer believes his pessimistic views are based on careful reflections about our immediate experience of the will. The will doesn't instantly become known to us as a whole. We gradually recognize it piecemeal, beginning with its particular acts. The most obvious include simple actions such as raising an arm or sitting down. When these acts are intentional, it's true to say that we willed them. The will is also expressed in a wide variety of other actions. Every act that involves desires or inclinations in any form is an act of will.
For not only willing and deciding in the narrowest sense, but also all striving, wishing, shunning, hoping, fearing, loving, hating, in short, all that directly constitutes our own will and woe, desire and disinclination, is obviously only affection of the will, is a striving, a modification, a willing or not willing, is just that which, when it operates outwards, exhibits itself as an act of will proper.
In Schopenhauer's view, all of these acts of will reveal that the nature of the will is to suffer. Every act of will grows out of some need or deficiency. A man who wishes for great wealth doesn't have it. Someone who hopes for fame isn't famous. Sometimes we try to get rid of something we don't want. Someone who fears crowds wants to avoid them. As long as we want something, we're in a state of suffering. We don't yet possess the object of our desire. Schopenhauer acknowledges that we do experience a feeling of satisfaction when our desire is fulfilled. But this moment of fulfillment is only a fleeting pleasure. Schopenhauer believes that there's no lasting satisfaction in merely having something. Once we get what we want, we stop wanting it. For every desire we satisfy, a new desire springs up to take its place. In Schopenhauer's view, this endless cycle of desires interspersed with brief moments of pleasure means that no final or lasting happiness is possible.
All willing springs from lack, from deficiency, and thus from suffering. Fulfillment brings this to an end. Yet for one wish that is fulfilled, there remain at least 10 that are denied. Further, desiring lasts a long time. Demands and requests go on to infinity. Fulfillment is short and meted out sparingly. But even the final satisfaction itself is only apparent. The wish fulfilled at once makes way for a new one. The former is a known delusion, the latter a delusion not as yet known. No attained object of willing can give a satisfaction that lasts and no longer declines. But it is always like the alms thrown to a beggar, which reprieves him today so that his misery may be prolonged till tomorrow. Therefore, so long as our consciousness is filled by our will, so long as we are given up to the throng of desires, with its hopes and fears, so long as we are the subject of willing, we never obtain lasting happiness or peace. Essentially, it is all the same whether we pursue or flee, fear harm or aspire to enjoyment. Care for the constantly demanding will, no matter in what form, continually fills and moves consciousness. But without peace and calm, true well-being is absolutely impossible.
Schopenhauer is fond of several Greek myths which, to his mind, depict the human condition. We're enslaved to the will and to inevitable and everlasting unhappiness. All these myths involve people who were punished by the gods for their assorted heinous misdeeds. Ixion was bound to a wheel that turned forever because he'd murdered his father-in-law and later tried to win the love of Hera, the queen of the gods. The Danaids, the 50 daughters of Danaus, were forced to eternally draw water with a sieve. In obedience to their father, each of them had killed their husbands on their wedding nights. Tantalus, for his crimes against the gods, was removed to Hades, the underworld. Here the gods put him, hungry and thirsty, before a pool of water which always receded as he approached to drink. Each of these myths involves something that tantalizes yet never satisfies. They capture Schopenhauer's belief that the nature of the will is eternal suffering. Each of us is an agent who wills, and we share the same fate as these mythological characters.
Thus the subject of willing is constantly lying on the revolving wheel of Ixion, is always drawing water in the sieve of the Danaids, and is the eternally thirsting Tantalus.
We struggle to fulfill this continual stream of desires. Schopenhauer says that at least this keeps us occupied. The alternative is to desire nothing. But with nothing to desire and nothing to strive for, we become bored.
It is fortunate enough when something to desire and to strive for still remains, so that the game may be kept up of the constant transition from desire to satisfaction, and from that to a fresh desire, the rapid course of which is called happiness, the slow course, sorrow. And so that this game may not come to a standstill, showing itself as a fearful life-destroying boredom, a lifeless longing without a definite object, a deadening languor.
Schopenhauer depicts the will as the controlling force within us, but traditionally, philosophers have made reason the governing power. They've given reason dominion over the will and the desires. Aristotle, for example, argues that desires are in some way non-rational because they may be based on whatever seems good at the moment. Yet desires are susceptible to the influence of reason. Aristotle says desire will heed the advice of reason much as a son obeys his father.
The desiring element in the soul, in a sense, shares in the rational principle, insofar as it listens to and obeys it. This is the sense in which we speak of taking account of one's father or one's friends.
Reason uses its knowledge of the good to turn desire away from the apparent good towards true goodness. The Christian philosopher stands closer to Schopenhauer than to Aristotle in his appraisal of the will. In St. Augustine's view, the will is on a par with reason. Rather than being persuaded by the truths of reason, the will can remain recalcitrant and go its own way. St. Augustine, in his work, The Confessions, analyzes the will in the narration leading up to his decision to serve God. He tries to explain why his will obeys some of the commands of the mind, but not others. When he wills to raise his hand, it raises. But when he wills to serve God, his will doesn't obey.
The mind gives an order to the body and is at once obeyed. But when it gives an order to itself, it is resisted. The reason, then, why the command is not obeyed is that it is not given with the full will. It is a disease of the mind, which does not wholly rise to the heights where it is lifted by the truth, because it is weighed down by habit.